commitment on our affairs, Jim G. from Florence is going to come up and share.
God damn. I'm Jim, I'm an addict. I'm grateful to be here in Bear Claim. This is kind of a humbling experience for me. Y'all give me a second. When we had our first Out of the Darkness into the Light, it was during a time when there was a lot of disunity, it's a good word for it, going around in the North Alabama area. Actually, we had withdrawn from the North Alabama area and created our own area, the great Nomni region. We made our own region. Anyways, so we was trying to figure out a way to get back in the North Alabama area, and we finally did. And tried to come up with something to bring some unity back to our area, because the end results, addicts were dying because they didn't have any place to go to. So we first thing we did was a unity celebration, and Vito spoke at our first unity celebration over at Muscle Shoals. And Jerry Russell, which was a big driving part of my home group and of this convention, put it on, and we helped him. And then for about a year or so after that, he kept bugging us about, we can do it in a convention. We can do it. No, man. Anyways, he kept bugging us and bugging us and bugging us. So it took us 18 months to put on Out of the Darkness and the Light One. That's you'll see it on the wall. And this is the result of one man's commitment to this fellowship. His affair with this fellowship, what made this possible? One person. And it turned into many people. And the reason, other than a lot of the reasons, but one reason you're here today is because of that desire and that commitment he had to practice his program in all our affairs. Now, I know we're sitting in here today, and I know we've had a lot of affairs. Yeah. Who hadn't had one? Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, my son-in-law and my daughter raised their hand. That's fucked up, man. Lord have mercy. I asked Kayla to do it with me, my daughter, and that's her over. She's working. It's her right over there. And that there is another blessing of practicing this program in all my affairs. Because if you have children, you're in this fellowship, you know, the odds are most of us are going to have somebody in our family that kind of stumbles in here. I'm saving a seat for a couple of my grandchildren right now. Her and my son Lee were raised in here, and they're here today. And how do you do that? You know, how does that happen? It's learning to take this program and applying it in all my affairs. And I know that I kept Googling affairs. I kept saying affairs in my phone, affairs. And the motherfucker wouldn't work. It would come back and says, I didn't quite understand that. Can you say it again? Like she knew I didn't need to get, you know, we didn't have Google when we first started working steps. I don't see how we did it without it. You know? Lord have mercy. We didn't have no step working guide. You know, we just had got a book not long before. It was an adventure, you know, blind leading the blind. We did the best we knew how to do with what we had at the time. And those people that were committed to this fellowship and practice these principles in all our affairs were the kind of people that my predecessors that brought me up in here and raised me in this fellowship. And I got clean back in the time that was, we didn't have, I don't know how to put this, but we were a little edgier, rougher type meetings, you know. In other words, we're told to shut the fuck up and sit down, you know. And you can't do that today. I mean, if you do, everybody, all the newcomers will hate you. Oh, you hear Jim Glock telling you to shut the fuck up and sit down? He's nothing but a little, he's a little bastard.
Dirty bastard.
Dirty bastard. Actually, I chair a meeting every Tuesday at my home group called Dirty Bastard Tuesday. I lived practicing all my affairs. I know for myself that I have a disease that's committed to me. It's never going anywhere. It's always going to be there. Every morning when I wake up, it's right there with me. You know, every night when I go to bed, it goes to bed with me. And it's committed to me in all my affairs. Because every area of my life when I got here was affected by the disease of addiction. And anything and everyone I come in contact with, I harmed somehow, some way. You know, and it didn't matter. Nothing was sacred. Nothing got in the way. Whatever it was that was standing in front of me in that next high, you know, I went through it. It didn't matter what it was or who it was or how it happened, but I was going to make sure I got what I wanted, you know, to do. And as I like that wounded animal that goes out only to hunt its food when it needs it. And it comes out of its shell or out of its hole or out from under a log or whatever the case might be, and it goes after it. And whatever's in the way is going to get hurt somehow, some way. And it didn't matter. So, I mean, you know, by living in the disease of addiction, I harmed a lot of people. Everything I touched, I harmed. You know, and when I got here, it was overwhelming. You know, when I first kind of came to and woke up, it was much overwhelming. I got, my story kind of two-part. I had got clean in 1991, and we put our first Out of the Darkness on about 2 years later. We had, our first speaker was Mona D. I don't know if y'all have ever heard Mona D. Yeah. Well, she come and spoke, and then she came back, and we couldn't get rid of her. The bitch moved to Decatur. God rest your soul, Mona D. Yeah, she was a good one. Yeah, she was something else. She was just exactly what our area needed at that time. The message that she carried to the fellowship was exactly what we need. And I remember we were hoping we had 200 to 250 people that showed up at this hotel that we would break even. You know, and look at it now. I mean, you know, now it's 3 days. Fucking Hornwall, it'll be a week-long goddamn thing before it's over. Goddamn, they everywhere. Everywhere. But I'm. It's good to see. I mean, you know, because I know Survival Group was a big major part of this convention for years and years and years, and we got accused of y'all running the convention, you know, and then maybe we were, maybe we weren't, but I'm grateful to see the willingness that they want to practice their program and all their affairs. So if I have a disease that's committed to me and everything that I do that affects my family, my work, my life, my peace, I have to find something to offset that, do something with that, to arrest that, and give me some kind of direction. And this fellowship and the Steps of Narcotics Anonymous has given me that. Learning how to take what I've learned in here and apply it out where I live. And it's easy to talk this shit up in here, you know, in meetings and stuff like that. But when you take it to your job or home to your family or whatever you do, wherever you take it to, we have to learn to apply that. Because we're not real good at getting along with normal people. You know, we had it our way, everybody to have a program called Narcotics Anonymous. You know, why don't you work some steps? What the fuck is he talking about, work steps? You know, And I remember one of the first jobs I had when I got back. When I got started this, I came to my first meeting in 78, or 79, survival group. And my grand sponsor, he's still here. He was one of the ones that was there. But I came out of the Decatur Retreat Hospital over here. That's back when when treatment was treatment. If you had insurance and good insurance and stuff, you know, you could go in. And they had a indoor pool, and they had a tennis court, and they had a sauna, and they had great food, and they had this lady that would come by and give you a TENS unit or massage your back every day if you happen to have back problems. Well, I didn't have back problems when I got there, but I developed a back problem while I was there. Yeah. I started walking like this. I said, "What's wrong with you? My back. I think I hurt my back." So I got me so many massages before I left. I didn't want to leave. But what I'm saying is that as my addiction progressed, and you know, I went to many different treatment facilities. Like, if we're fortunate enough to make it to one, a lot of us do. The last one I went to was a horse barn up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. Is that right? Gauche, Michigan. He's from Michigan, that's the reason I was looking at him. Hell, I spent a year and a half up there. I don't know what it's called. But what they have up there, they have what's called youpers. These are people.
Yes.
All right.
The youpers.
Yeah, yeah. And you can't understand a damn word they say. They're kind of like Cajuns. And they all wear coveralls and spit tobacco and cut wood. I mean, you couldn't tell the females from the males. You couldn't. Yeah. And I knew they practice this shit in all their affairs. No, they sure do. They apply it everywhere. But up there, I learned we had to end up praying for food. If we'd have enough food to feed the people that were there. And that's humbling when you got to pray for food. I prayed over food many times. Being raised Catholic, you know, we prayed for every goddamn thing. I'm a recovering Catholic too, y'all. Don't get offended. I was raised as an altar boy, and I rang the bells and served communion and drank beer with the priest after the goddamn service. Now, I didn't have one of them priests that would kind of, you know. Don't go thinking that shit. I did. I sure did. But my predecessors taught me is how to take this thing and apply it to my home life and to my life outside of the fellowship. And, I mean, it's easy to work a program inside the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous because we're all... Like here, oh, it's good to see you. How are you doing? Good. And most of the time, I really don't give a fuck how you're doing. I mean, you know. And I'm sorry if I can't remember your names. I know a lot of y'all, but I'm old. Shut up, Kevin. We still got time for you to get up here.
I'm going to go. I'm
going to
head out.
Okay. But anyways, they taught me how to take this program home, and what they taught me is that the traditions have a lot to do with me applying the program in all my affairs. So when I got involved in work, we're doing the traditions right now, what's it called, guiding principles? We finally started tradition 4, and we've been on them 4 years. Most of us will die before we ever get done with that damn thing. Because we're all old to begin with. You know, but there's a lot of good stuff in there. But we've come up with a lot of literature since I've gotten clean. I don't know where I'm going with this. But anyways, yeah, I learned that from my predecessors how to take this and apply it, you know, by applying the traditions to my life. And, knowing that I'm just a part of a greater fellowship called the human race. And there's no greater or lesser, and race, color, creed, all that stuff y'all taught me in here that separates us, you know, that I need to learn how to get along. And I learned how to get along with y'all in here. It taught me how to learn to get along with people out there. Now, do I do it every day? Not so much. I work for a Damon, a friend of mine's been in the fellowship, and he's got some, I do maintenance work on some properties. I also work with a place called Lotus Recovery House. And there's five houses full of women. I've got 45 wives. Some of them in here right now. They sure are. And you're talking about learning how to practice your principles and all your faith. Them women are off the hook, man. House one's what I call boot camp. If they make it through it, you know. God bless them, and I'm grateful to be able to have, honored to be able to do that. You know, it was a great need. That's, you know, my daughter went to prison. That's where she went when she got out of prison, was the Lotus Recovery House. So I owe a lot to that place, and it'll ever hold a special place in my heart. You know, I'm grateful we have places for women to go today that we didn't have them, places for them to go then. So when I first got clean, we didn't have all that many women in our fellowship. I remember the lady that chaired our first convention, her name is Rhonda, and she was a little Jewish lady, and we picked her because we figured she had the best credit of all of us. She's the only one we could trust signing a contract that they would, you know, if they run her name and credit history, we could probably get it, you know. Yeah. God bless her. She's still clean today, you know. Harold, that was one of his affairs. But we... We have to learn how to deal with all our affairs in the fellowship. And don't get it wrong. I mean, you know, we just some incestuous people. We just kind of like to, you know, and shit happens in meetings, you know. I'm guilty, you know. I'm not preaching to the choir. About being able to do this, what I found out is how to learn how to love people. And they would always tell me, Jim, you need to learn to love them while they're here because they're not going to be here this long anyways. And maybe that touch of love that they feel and acceptance they feel in the fellowship is enough to maybe they can hold on to that and that can get them back up in here. And love's a tricky thing, man. You know, loving people where they're at is hard to do sometimes. I know people loving me where I was at was hard to do sometimes. You know, but cool story, my son, which is in here, Kayla left, didn't she?
God. Oh, yeah,
Kayla left. Yeah. But anyways, I'm probably, she's gave me three beautiful grandchildren. Two of them, I've got a seat saved at my home group for, but they'll hopefully, maybe not, but I think one of them for sure will find her way up in this song. But she's a little girl who does the bingo at night. Ah, 59! Oh, 71! She doesn't like attention at all. Just screams it out. Oh, my God. I don't know if my heart could take it. But anyways, she's a blessing. Redheaded. My mother was redheaded. There ain't no redheaded people in her side of the family, or Kayla's mother's side of the family, but we got a redheaded granddaughter, which is cool. My mama would love that. God rest her soul. But anyways, going back to the love of the fellowship and being able to practice in all my affairs what you people taught me in the outside world, you know, has a lot to do with being able to love people. You know, and be happy for them. because I have a disease that's, you know, it's rooted in self-centered fear, and it's surrounded by dishonesty, unwillingness, and closed-mindedness. All my shit stems from that, and I do not want to get vulnerable with anybody, you know, and let down any kind of walls. And but anyways, my son, as he grew up, went to a special needs schools and all of his life. And being part of that, I got to be a part of the thing called the Special Olympics. And these kids are amazing. They don't know nothing about us. Not a thing. All they know is they're happy to see you. They got a smile on their face, and they just want to hug you and have a good time. And I wish I could be that way in every meeting I'm sitting in, but that's just not the fucking truth. Because I'm not. But I try. You know, I'm willing to try to accept people where they are. And anyways, they don't care what you look like, what you drive up in, what you wear, whether you're male or female, what kind of sexual identity you are, or you know, what you do for a living, all those things that separate us from the sunlight of a loving higher power, they don't think about none of that. They just want to have a good time and love people. They could care less about it. None of that enters their minds when they're in the middle of that. And a special, if you ever get a chance to work with Special Olympics, please do so. But anyways, me being a volunteer, there was a little race going on, and these kids, you gotta understand, they're just running wild all over the goddamn field. You know, it's hard to keep them gathered where they're supposed to be, because, like I said, you know, they just let me go. It's kind of like newcomers, you know. let me go. Y'all ain't got no newcomers like that, do you? Woo, we do. I used to be one. Couldn't sit still. Didn't know how to sit down, up and down to the coffee pot, bathroom, you know, everywhere. Just anything. Anything. But these kids are kind of the same way like newcomers, you know, and they just want, you know, they don't really know what to do. Like a newcomer. They got that look on their face. What the hell is this? And but anyways, I was part of a race, and this changed my recovery in my life from then on. I was part of a race that, and these kids are committed in all their affairs. They are solely committed to what they're doing for that moment, that day. And nothing else matters at that time. So they have people at the starting line, and they have people halfway down. That's because when the kids start running, they kind of go from one side, kind of like sponsors do with their people they sponsor. Because they'll be running down, they'll go this way, and the sponsor will go, "Man, you might not get back over here and do this right here." And then they have people at the finish line holding a little thing up, ribbon for them to run through. They shot the little gun. Boom! Here they go. Just flying down through there. You know, smiling from ear to ear. And there's three of them. It was two boys and a little girl. And they just head and head. And they get to the halfway point. Right after the halfway point, the little girl in the middle fell. And the other two stopped running. They turned around and picked the little girl up. And they finished the race together. How many times have you failed in the fellowship, having nothing to do with chemicals? You've acted out on some kind of character defect. You made a goddamn fool out of yourself again. And how many, you know, we got those people, because I used to be one of them, that will step right over your ass. We got those people that will kick you while you're down. I told you, motherfucker. You know, and then we have those people that practice these principles in all their affairs that will pick you up and get you on the right track again. That changed my life. So don't ever think, oh God, here comes my little redhead. You can't talk in this microphone. I guess you could if you really wanted to. But don't ever think that you're in a place that you don't need the addict sitting next to you. Because one day you might. And by loving people where they're at and what they're doing and how they live, however they're doing it, is the very thing that might bring them back up in the fellowship again. So next time you see somebody fall down, don't step over them. Don't kick them while they're down. Help them up. Help them up. Help them back on their feet and say, look, man, let me help dust yourself off. This happened to me one time. This is what I had to do. So just remember that that could be you. I love y'all. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
My son-in-law. I didn't want my daughter to get married, but he's bigger than I am. He's a lot bigger than I am.
My name's Ryan. I'm an addict. I'm grateful to be here clean and have the ability to be the short speaker in this workshop today. Jim, thank you for everything you shared. And I don't have as much to say as he does because he's always got a lot of stuff to say, but most of the time it's good when it comes to recovery. My experience is I just picked up 9 years clean yesterday. So that was a blessing. I am. And I ain't had no damn affair. Not doing that. But I really learned how to practice commitment in this fellowship in a spiritual way, only in this fellowship. I never had made a commitment to anything, really in my life besides getting high. I made that commitment when I was 14, and I quit using when I was 34. So I'm 42 now. And so I spent 20 years, in active addiction and really trying to do that to the best of my ability. It wasn't like, let me just do a little dope or just sell a little drugs or, a little crime or, all that. I was all in, And I was always trying to find out how to be better at it because I really sucked at being a criminal, to be honest with you. I was committed, though, so I'm in jail 23 times, by the grace of God, I'm free today, I'm clean today, and I have a program that teaches me how to live clean and showed me how not to be the career criminal that I got put on my occupation on the last time I got arrested. They feel like normally I put out some bullshit, self-employed or whatever. I don't know whatever I used to do, but it was always selling drugs. It was never anything but that normally. But they put career criminal, and I said, God dang. They must know something. They figured it out by now. But what I hadn't figured out was how to stay clean and how to quit going to jail. I knew that when I would go to jail, when I got out, I'm coming back. I used to go in the beginning. I'm not coming back to this motherfucker. Oh, I know I was going back. Eventually I was so convinced of it. I'm like, don't let me out. Just don't let me out until I got somewhere to go, safe to be at. And one time they let me out to go to a program, and when I got out, they called the program, we don't have a bed for you. I'm like, well, why'd you let me out? Why did y'all should have left me where I was at? Because just a matter of time, I'm going to be right back there with more charges that I could have prevented, having. And so that was just kind of the my life as I knew it. Like at that point, I used to be who I was as a child. I became who I was as an adult, and that was an addict. And I didn't really know how to live anymore. I knew how to live high, and I knew how to commit crime, and I knew how to self-destruct, and just really throw my life away every chance I got, and like Jim shared, I really hurt everybody that I ever had in my life, my parents, my children, my grandparents, aunts and uncles, just, friends, most of them. And so, I really, at the end of the road, I just was like, I don't know what to do anymore. And that's a great place to be. And they, that's kind of like, I wasn't really desperate and I didn't really want to not get high anymore. I just didn't want to quit suffering. I didn't want to suffer anymore the same way I was suffering. I just was tired of being, running to down day four in the street, like, don't have, I just spent all my money, police got my car, all my clothes got stole, all my stuff spread to the wind, can't go home because I'm being surveilled by the police, it's like, have nowhere to go but hide in a field or something, it was like that in the end. It was horrible. So it just wasn't, it used to be fun for me. I used to love to get high. I used to love to go to the club. I used to love to sell drugs, hang out with everybody. That was my whole life. That's what I loved to do. But I didn't love to do it anymore. It was the worst thing in my life. And today I've got, I got the 9 years clean, but that's the only thing I've done perfectly in this program is not pick up, I just decided whenever I got clean, I actually got clean in Florida, in Southwest Florida, and that's where I got my foundation at. And they said I had to be clean to go into the program. And I got out of jail, used instantaneously. I had it set up already when I got out. And I used for about 4 or 5 days. And then I went, while I'm in Florida, like, take me to Florida, I'm gonna get high and hang out in a hotel for a little bit. And then, like, all right, fine, I gotta stop, And so I just made that decision, I gotta be clean to go to this program. And I'm just, if they say I can't use anything, well, then that's what I'm going to do. And I just went from there with it. I didn't really understand, the concept of complete abstinence. But I knew it was the requirement. So, I just heard the message of recovery and in that program. And this is the first time I've been into a 12-step facility. And I was still hard-headed, but I was willing to just be abstinent. And when I started, eventually woke up, decided I'm going to go to class and start listening and just started identifying with people that were like myself or people not even like myself that I believed that they were clean, and they were saying all the suggestions of the program, get out, go to a meeting, get a sponsor, do this, step work, do the 90 and 90 and don't use and all that kind of stuff and read and... I'm like, well, hey, why not me? I had to ask myself that question. Why not me? And it's because before I never wanted it. And then after I realized that it was possible, like I just had to make that decision, and that's what I did. So I actually went to way more than 90 and 90. They had meetings available 2, 3, 4, 5 times a day everywhere, and so I went into sober living and just kind of just started filling out all the different fellowships, really. And after about a year and a half clean, I would come home and visit because I was still living down there. And I realized, I'm from here. I'm not from Decatur. I'm from Huntsville, Madison. And I realized I don't have what it takes to live here. I don't have what it takes to stay clean in Huntsville, Alabama. Like, I just don't got it, And because I wasn't going to meetings. I wasn't hanging out with people clean. I wasn't doing nothing I was doing in Florida. I was coming out here and going to hang out where all my friends that were getting high was at, And I didn't use, but I had all the opportunities, I've literally had to be like, no, thank you. I don't smoke meth anymore, but I appreciate the offer, And they were like, really? Like, well, everybody does that here. I'm like, nah, I quit, But so, that's just insanity, So I'm like, man, and that's actually after I moved home from Florida. But I didn't pick this fellowship until, like I said, had about a year and a half clean because I hadn't started working the steps. I hadn't picked a program. And I got scared. I was like, there's no way I'm going to make it. And that not making it for me meant a whole lot. Like, I don't identify getting high today with using drugs. I identify that using with all the misery and all the destruction and all the charges and incarcerations that let my family and kids down. And, you know, that's what I do when I get high. Like, I'm making that decision, you know. And so today I'm living, and I just stayed a part of the program. Like, I just decided I'm going to work the first step, you know. And when I went back to Florida, my sponsor, who actually be my sponsor, he came in and did H&I, and he was like, well, come to the meetings I go to. No, I'm not doing that, you know, in the beginning. But this time he was like, you ready, aren't you? I'm like, yeah, I'm ready. So I started doing that, you know, and we worked the first three. But he said, listen, make the commitment to me to work all 12 of these steps with me. And I said, all right, I can do that. And but I'm not going to stay here. I'm just letting you know, like, I'm going home. And so when I moved back here, there was two people at Air Group for the noon meeting. And I was like, fuck, you know, like, this is not going to work for me. You know, I was scared to death then. But I said, you know what, I'm just going to keep coming back. And I'm going to find a meeting list. And I just kept going, and that two people changed to 30 people. It changed to 2-3 times a day at the time. And I just started, you know, that's what I did every day. You know, I wasn't even working yet, but I'd go there and then just say, so what are we gonna do now? Like, after the meeting, like, where are we going? What are we doing? You know? We finna do something, you know? I used to sell dope in that same parking lot. Like, I used to sell to the people who rent the Air Group space out. You know, that was how crazy. I'm like, how is this even possible? I never saw it because I was right there. It was there the whole time. You know, I'm like, how did I miss it? But I don't know. So that's kind of why I'm. You know, for me, H&I is a big deal for me. That's my commitment. That's the thing I learned to be committed to the most. Carrying the message of recovery that you don't have to use anymore, and you can do it clean, and this is the way. And so, you know, that was what was given to me. And I remember I've been to Bradford, you know, for years now. And at the time, we were going to the women's side, and they had adolescents at the time, but not the men. And the guys who were going to the men, we didn't really know who they were, you know. And I was like, well, one day maybe they'll give it up because they surely ain't working no program, you know. We don't even know, you know, we don't even think they're a part of NA. And so two of them got arrested, and one of them was like there forever. And he was like, you want to take this over? Yeah, you know, so that's every Wednesday, you know. And I did that until it started taking off, you know, which was years. You know, I went every Wednesday for years. And so that's kind of part of my program now, is every Wednesday, you know, or it's going to be a Monday and a Wednesday now. Like, I'm going to do some H&I, you know. And so I started taking that commitment, like, if I commit to this, I got to do it. You know, it's not about just saying I'm going to do something. It's about doing it, you know. And if I can't make it, I got to pick up the phone and call them. I'm not coming, you know. That's part of a commitment. Or I need to try to find somebody to take my spot that's accountable, you know, that's going to do the job right, you know, because it's very serious to me about carrying a clear message of recovery, not just the message. You know, to me, H&I is not your life story, it's your recovery life, you know, how you came from hell and came from the darkness into the light and stayed clean, you know. And so that's turned into, you know, me making those kind of commitments to be the, I was the cleanup guy at Air Group for a long time, or taking a bit, you know, meeting at a business, at the home group business meeting, I'm taking a position, you know. It would always be like the lowest position. Like, I want to clean the floor, or I want to be the literature person, or I want to daggone just, I don't want to be somebody important, you know. And the thing, I just want to do the humble job, you know, because I always was the showboat in the, you know, in my life. I was always, you know, trying to be as flashy as possible, and everybody know me, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so I had to take that arrogance and try to, you know, apply humility to that. And that's where I get, you know, H&I is a humble job. Like, it's something that, like, I just hope one of y'all hear what I'm saying tonight, you know, or today, and can use it to stay clean and not have to go back, you know. I've buried many of my friends since I've been clean, and I've tried to, you know, share that with them. Like, you know, family members and friends are the hardest ones to help, right? So, you know what, I said, you know what, I'm probably not going to help not one of them, but I could probably help somebody I don't even know, you know. And just, so I'm going to do the best at that job. Like, and I'm going to try to share the thing that's not going to turn off one person. You know, I want to share something that could be universally accepted and stuff like that. So, you know, not everybody sold drugs and, you know, did stuff like that. A lot of us probably did, but, you know, some of us came from all over the different place. So I say, hey, if you don't identify with me, keep coming around, come to the meetings, and you'll meet all kinds of people. Like, this fellowship's so diverse. And the door so wide open for acceptance into this fellowship that's what really attracted me to it. That, you know, that's any addict. It's not just like one particular type. You know, you come from any walk of life, any background, any belief, anything. You know, and so that's kind of what turned me off to some of the other ones. You know, like they're a little bit exclusive, and that's what kept me high before. Like, I had to walk a perfect line. I can't walk a damn high. I can't walk a line when I'm not high, you know, much less when I'm high. And so, I just took all these principles and worked the steps, you know, with the sponsor that's got experience that I can sit there and just, you know, be real with, and they can be real with me, and that's what I've gained understanding is through working the steps, what all this stuff's about, what principles are about, like commitment and using that across the board and not just where I want to use it. You know, it's easy to apply a principle where you want to. That's manipulation. You know, and so, yeah, the biggest commitment I made recently was to my wife, you know, and I've never made that commitment. And so I take it very seriously. I knew what I was doing, you know, that time. Like, that was a big deal, and I took it very seriously, and still do. So, you know, that's what I've been able to do today is say, you know what, I'm not going to be who I used to be today, you know. And I could do that through, you know, letting people into my life and letting them hold me accountable and let them know what's going on and just being real as possible. And when I'm not, I'm be like, I was full of shit right there. You know, like, I got that ability today to work through when I'm not being real, when I'm not being spiritual, when I'm not being what the program's taught me to be, you know. When I mess up today, it's like somebody's holding up a gun and just shooting it off. Boom, look what you just did, you know. Can't ignore it. I can't deny when I'm acting unspiritual now. You know, it's just something I used to get high about. You know, I could just get high and do anything. I could get high and do anything. No, we're not talking about good stuff. You know, and just not feel nothing about it. You know, and if I started feeling something about it, I'd do it again. Not do it until I couldn't feel nothing. And normally I'd wake up and look in the mirror and I couldn't see. You know, I couldn't see me. I'd see something else. And that would scare me. Like, that would... That's kind of one of the things, like, I used to look in the mirror and see evil. And I don't do that today. Like, I can look myself in the eye. I can look my friends in the eye. I can look my wife in the eye. And what I'm saying is what I mean, you know. So, that's the gift of recovery, you know, is that freedom from unspirituality, you know, and freedom from drugs, you know. But it's just a daily thing. Like, I've learned to take this into a daily effort and start out, like Jim saying, knowing I need help, knowing I need spirituality, knowing I need to pray, knowing I need to go to a meeting, knowing I need to stay involved and do service and be a sponsor and have a sponsor and do step work and get stuck on tradition 3 and, you know, and then go, okay, I'm going to go to Florida and go do a couple of traditions with my sponsor. Like, that's the kind of commitment. I kept my sponsor in Florida. I just fly to Florida, you know, and I've drove to Florida. I've spent a lot of effort just going to go do step work, you know. And so, I don't know. I'm probably talking over, but I really wasn't trying to be up here for real. Just kind of a spur of the moment. Hey, you want to do this? Hell yeah. Yeah, I do. You know, I didn't know I was going to do it, but, you know, I know that when I'm asked to do something in NA, and it's by people that I trust, I'm going to do it, you know. I'm going to do it because it's what saved my life. It gave me the life that I could value living today. You know, my dad told me yesterday that, you know, he's so proud of me that it's, you know, indescribable. And so, you know, that's what I stay clean for, like that type thing, because I fucked my dad over so bad, you know, like really, really bad. Like, and so, you know, I pay that back a day at a time by staying clean and keep trying, you know, even when I fail. So thanks for letting me share.
Hell yeah.
Give it up for both the speakers again. Yeah. Set it up and close.